You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk about media coverage of religion stories a lot, and sometimes it looks like it's improving. Sometimes it looks like the media in general are coming to a better understanding of religious issues, and sometimes it's just downright bad. Joining us to talk about media coverage of two religion stories, both from the New York Times, one about a Russian feminist punk rock group, and I believe the Russian Orthodox Church, and another about a Dutch Catholic church castrating victims of sexual abuse? Strange stuff. How is it covered? George Conger formerly served as a British correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and the overseas correspondent for the Church of England newspaper, and he's a contributor to GetReligion.org. George, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd.
You have written about two particularly egregious examples of religious coverage in the New York Times. Tell us about this first one regarding the Orthodox Church in the former Soviet Union.
Well, at the Cathedral of Christ the Savior in Moscow, which is the main cathedral in the city for the Orthodox Church, on Shrove Tuesday, during the middle of the service, a group of young women wearing masks, ski masks, and dressed in sort of wild, outlandish clothing ran up in front of the iconostasis, the place in front of the altar itself, and began to perform a musical routine of music set to Orthodox liturgical tunes, but with refrains such as "Holy Mary, Mother of God, drive Vladimir Putin out of Russia," and then things like "The Orthodox bishops are tools of the KGB," and it was all filmed by their supporters, and you can watch it on YouTube. It was the big hit in Russia for several weeks, and the women were arrested, the New York Times, about a month after the fact, wrote an article about this and proceeded to get basically everything completely wrong.
There's a long list. You say it just comes down to being kind of silly. What was fundamentally, journalistically wrong about the New York Times coverage of this rather bizarre story?
Journalistically, a journalist shouldn't take sides. They should present both sides of the story and allow an intelligent reader to discern what is going on and provide a full range of facts to allow someone to decide. What the New York Times did was that it prepared almost a PR piece for these groovy young girls, that's my word, not theirs, and that basically made fun of the deep religious sensibilities of the Orthodox, not really getting the fact that this is the sort of thing, the ridicule and blasphemy that the communists did in the Stalinist era that led to the death of most of the Orthodox clergy in the the deaths of tens of millions of people in the Stalinist era, and not having a sense of where the history is, the New York Times just blew it, just utterly blew it. Just sort of treating this as a fun little joke. Girls will be girls.
Now, in particular, there were the reactions of, I believe, a Russian Orthodox priest who's rather outspoken. You say you've had some dealings with him. He doesn't hold any of his cards back. But I can't remember how it was said in the piece. They said something about how he's known for outlandish statements or something like this, but they provide absolutely no examples of such statements?
Yes, that's an example of the sort of one-sided nature of the article. It introduces the character Vsevolod Chaplin, who is a senior official in the Orthodox Church. And it introduced him by saying he is known for his outrageous and outlandish statements, but doesn't tell us what those outrageous and outlandish statements are. And then it quotes other people as saying that, oh, these girls should be thrown into prison for blasphemy. Well, but the way it's sort of packaged is that a normal reader would say, Father Chaplin of the Orthodox Church wants these women in jail for blasphemy. Well, first off, blasphemy is not a crime in Russia. And second, Chaplin has said these women shouldn't go to the jail, but they should be punished for trespassing and, you know, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime mentality. That Father Chaplin is saying that the New York Times is saying that he wants these women in jail. So it's half truth, it's half reporting, it's sort of pimping for one side of a story without giving a full sense of what's going on.
Do you think in the case of the New York Times that it is intentional, or do you think it's just this is such a juicy story and the characters in it could easily fall into kind of the cardboard cutouts that we have in our minds that just got lazy?
I think there's more. I think that's true. I think it's a fair point. And that, having been a foreign correspondent, it's very hard to get your stuff into a newspaper with limited space. So you have to sell a story, and you have to sort of, as the British would say, sort of sex it up a bit. Here we've got something that on its surface is just a case of a left-wing political anarchist group trying to make a point in a cathedral. And it's sort of been taken as a, and the New York Times has sort of massaged it into a girl power story, when it's not a girl power story. And it's just sort of the nature of the way newspapers are these days. They need to sell a product, and sometimes they have to sort of give it a spin to make it more palatable, to get it on the page.
I want to move on to another story in just a second, but you talk about the lead of this New York Times story about the feminist punk rock group, and it makes promises that the article itself simply does not keep. What do you mean?
Well, it starts off, I think the first sentence or the leads of the story said, this is all about a story about the role of church, art, and women in Russian society. And so So a normal reader would say, okay, we're going to see discussion of church, art, and women in Russian society. Well, there's none of that. The only thing you have is at the very end, a feminist writer says, this isn't feminism. So in other words, the Times sets it up as sort of a big, sort of deep look at the conflicting roles in new modern Russia of the church, of the role of women, of the role of art, and you don't get anything. It's almost like a very sort of dopey monkeys 1960s video. Routine is being pumped up as if it were great social commentary.
George, you've also written about another New York Times story. This one is really a tragic and sad story, and made more tragic and sad by the sloppiness with which it was covered, especially the headline, which would catch even the most casual reader's attention. Dutch Church is accused of castrating young men.
Yeah, that was wild. I have to say that's the only way I can describe it. What happened there is a Dutch newspaper reported a story, and about a week later, the New York Times, on March 21st, their Brussels correspondent took the story and wrote it up for the New York Times. And the story essentially said is that somebody who died about 55 years ago was sterilized, and he happened to be he was sterilized in a Catholic hospital. And he had accused the Catholic Church when he was a younger man of being sexually abused when he was in care of a Catholic orphanage. And the New York Times wrote this article that essentially implied that those who complained about being abused by the Catholic Church were sterilized, were castrated. And this is like so wild, it takes your breath away.
Was any evidence provided for a link between the castration and the reporting of the abuse?
No. A friend of the dead man. Well, in 2010, the Catholic Church in Holland went through a terrible pedophile scandal. Sort of all the junk that had been accumulating over the years came out, and a commission was formed, and it reported on incidents of abuse, sexual abuse. We've seen this in the U.S., we've seen it in Australia and England. The Dutch have gone through their own version of it. One of the people was a man went to complain to this commission saying he had a friend who died 55 years ago who made these charges. And the commission looked into it, and the commission was headed by a former government minister, and the minister said there's no evidence, no proof of this. So it wasn't exactly new. And the New York Times article went on to say that there could be up to 10 people who were castrated by the Catholic Church. So you've got a story that says up to 10 people, 9 of whom we haven't named, but one who's been dead for 55 years, has been castrated by the Catholic Church. And you have to ask yourself a question if you're a reader, how does the Catholic Church go around castrating people? You know, I don't think they have an office of chief castrator. I mean, this is just it. So in other words, and then I just started checking around, and I looked into it, and I found a few journals articles. And basically, the true story is that the Dutch government from the 30s to the early 60s had a program of eugenics. People who were mentally deficient or who were pedophiles and who were incorrigible were castrated by the order of the government. And some of these castrations took place in Dutch Catholic hospitals. But it was the government who ordered, under a eugenics program, these young men to be, or older men to be castrated. And it took place in a Catholic hospital. So what you've got is you've got the New York Times taking somebody's unsubstantiated complaint and then tying it into a Dutch program of eugenics. Now, we don't even get into the morality of the eugenics program, but just the Times decides to run with the story without checking it and without doing due diligence.
George Conger formerly served as a British correspondent for the Jerusalem Post and overseas correspondent for the Church of England newspaper. He's a contributor to GetReligion.org. George, thanks for your time.
Sure. Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to Dr. Cameron McKenzie of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, about the church and the state. Folks, we're 9 days away from resurrecting sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org on Easter Sunday. We will be broadcasting sacred music 24/7 at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the world during the Easter season, coming Easter Sunday. You can listen live 24/7 starting Easter Sunday at LutheranPublicRadio.org, LutheranPublicRadio.org. We know that many of you enjoyed sacred music for the Christmas season that we brought to you from LPR. Well, it's coming again for the Easter season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.